Well, I'm assigned an open this time instead of assigned a subject, so I have gone back to what I enjoy doing, and these are character studies. And we're going to study two characters tonight, or this afternoon, and we're going to study what happened and how this came to being. I'd like to start this off with the preface that God created this world and that God created humanity, and He devised a plan for humanity and a structure for families and a structure for a husband and a wife. And He set everything up so that if we would do it like He has told us to do it, it would work. And everything will jive, and it is something that will work. But when we begin to deviate from God's plans, then we start having problems. And we're going to talk about two of these situations tonight where there's a deviation from the plan of God. When God set humanity up, He set man up as the head of the house, as the head of the family, and as the head of the wife. He set the wife up in an equal position, but the responsibilities that God gave the wife are entirely different than the responsibilities that He gave the man. The man is to be the head of the household. He is responsible for the family. That does not mean that we cannot use different strengths of each spouse. It doesn't mean that in a household that one spouse can be responsible for things according to their strengths and the other can be otherwise. But it does mean that there is a plan which God has set in motion which we are to follow. Vicki and I were married some 15 years. Our kids were already here when she finished her school and got a job teaching school. And after she got her job teaching school, she says, "I love to teach school and I want to work, but I don't like to cook." And I said, "Well, I like to cook, but I really don't care much about working." So we have kind of set the last 35 years up according to that plan. It's worked. I have my strengths. She has her strengths. So it's not as if you cannot make things work according to the strengths of the spouse, but there is a plan that God has devised. We're going to talk about a couple of issues tonight where the individuals got away from the plan of God. And because they got away from it, the individual suffered, the family suffered, and the nation of Israel suffered. Let's go to Heavenly Father in a word of prayer. The title of the lesson tonight comes from a verse from Proverbs 31 and 3 that says, "Give not thy strength to a woman." A long time ago, there was a young boy. This young boy had a very important, a very powerful father. This was a man that was very great. He was a man that was revered. He was a man that was very highly thought of. This little boy grew up with inconceivable riches. He heard many stories about his father's heroic exploits. But being a bright child, he began to realize as he began to grow up that he didn't know his father, and there were things about his father that he didn't understand. And there was questions and there was blanks in the life of his father that he couldn't quite put his hand on. His mother, as he began to reach adolescence, began to sit down with this little boy and began to explain things to him, to tell him about his past and about his father's past and about her past. And she was very delicate. She didn't want to traumatize the boy, but yet she realized that as this young man grew up, there were things that he had to know. There were things that he had to understand. This little boy loved his daddy, and this little boy loved his mother. They were very, very close. And so as his mother talked to him, he listened very intently. He clung to her words, and he tried to understand the things that she was saying. And the blanks begin to fill in of the things that he didn't understand about his daddy and about his mother and about his life. And finally, when he reached an age of maturity where he was able to understand, she told him the whole story. Unfortunately, as she told the story of the young boy about the sins of his father, she also had to implicate herself in this because there were also sins that was her fault. He understood the admiration that men had for his father. He was a great leader. He was a great military man. He was a man whose exploits were great. But now he's beginning to understand that there is also a human side to his father and the regret that his father had. He He also began to understand some of these blanks in his father's life and these areas that his father was embarrassed to talk about, that his father would not visit upon. And he began to understand the pain that his father had gone through. He also understood the pain that his mother had gone through as she had to tell him the things that she was telling him and the explanations. And when he reached this age of maturity, all of the innocence of childhood was now gone, and he was facing the realities, the harsh realities of an adult living in a harsh world. The words that she said was to prepare this young man and to teach this young man and to prepare him for the life that he was to lead as the king of Israel when his father was gone. This boy's name was Solomon. And the mother that sat so tenderly and spoke to this boy to explain these things that she did not want to talk about was Bathsheba. But it fell upon her to inform her son, the future king of Israel, of the great sin that his father David had committed. Her as an accomplice in this great sin and the consequences of this great sin, Solomon's own mother, Bathsheba, was the one that had to tell this boy these things. She did it for one reason and one reason only, and that was to protect this young boy. She did it to prepare this young boy because she knew that when Solomon became king, he would be faced with the exact same temptations that David was faced with, and she wanted him to be able to overcome these temptations and not fall and to succumb to these temptations and face the consequences of his sins as did his father David. And she did everything in her power to teach this son, to prepare this son, to protect this son, so that what happened to his father would never happen to him. But there was great disappointment in the life of Bathsheba because her hopes were not realized. And the same temptations that his father had faced, Solomon faced also. But whereas David had succumbed to the temptation once, Solomon succumbed to the temptations hundreds of times. He had numerous wives and numerous concubines, and the problems that he had with these foreign women, these ungodly women, and the problems that these women brought to the kingdom of Israel were problems that destroyed him and his family and the nation of Israel itself. After a lifetime, at the end of his life, Solomon reflects back upon his life and reflects back upon the instructions and the teachings that Bathsheba had given him as a son. And as a very regretful man in his advanced ages, he now was attempting to guard his sons against the same problems and the same temptations that his daddy had fallen for and for the temptations that he, as a father, had fallen for. And just as Bathsheba before him, now he seeks to warn and protect his sons, to protect them. I want you to listen to the words of Proverbs 31, verses 1 through 3. The words of King Lemuel, the prophecy that his mother taught him. What, my son, and what the son of my womb, and what the son of my vow? Give not thy strength unto women, nor thy ways to that which destroyeth kings. And that is the gist of our lesson today. This is the reading, the purpose of our lesson today is to echo the words that Bathsheba said to her son so many years ago, give not thy strength unto women. Lemuel, this was the pet name that his mother called him. It was a name that meant devoted to God. It was a name that Samuel enjoyed, the name that he liked. And I think at this point of time, as he looks back and reflects and writes these words, he's a man that he's very regretful that the life he has lived has not been one that reflects the name devoted to God. But as Bathsheba was teaching him about the sins of his father, she had to include herself as an accomplice in this because it was the downfall of one of God's greatest servants. And when he listened to his mother teach and the instruction, now he's trying to teach his own sons the things. What she is saying to Solomon at this point is whatever happens to a man, whether he be the king of a country as David, or as Solomon, or whether he's the king only of his home, don't fall and give your influence and your strength away to a woman. You know, it's easy to understand when a man such as David, he succumbed to the temptation of Bathsheba, and he failed at this one time. It was a one-time mistake. But in the case of Solomon, this was a temptation that hit him hundreds and hundreds of times. David gave his strength away to one woman, Bathsheba, and he suffered the consequences. The results of David giving his strength to a woman was the sin of adultery, and then to conceal his adultery with another man's wife. He was forced to put that woman's husband in the front line of a battle. He caused this man to be killed. And the heavy hand of God was upon David, upon his family, for the very rest of his life. It's something that never went away because of the sin which David committed with this one woman. Solomon didn't just fall to the temptation of one woman, but he fell to the temptation of many women. And the result of his life was not a single catastrophe, but it was a continuation of an individual that did not live a godly life. Solomon's was a case of a young man who began with God's hand of blessing upon him, but by temptation, by lured and enticed by strange women, Solomon turned his back upon God and his father, and his sins cost him deeply. Himself, his family, and also the nation of Israel suffered because of the sins of Solomon. The point we're trying to make here is that when a man gives his strength to a woman, or when a man gives his strength to women, as is the case of Solomon, when he is the husband of one wife, whether he is promiscuous, when he is a womanizer, when he abandons the woman and the wife of his youth and chases after other women, it is obvious the sins that he is committing. It's not so obvious, though, in the case that none of these things yet gives his strength to women. By giving his strength to a woman, even one woman, can be a very serious thing. So we've looked at the example of Solomon. We've looked at the example of David. We've heard the words of Bathsheba as she did everything in the world she could to protect her son Solomon from the sins that had destroyed David and been such a serious consequence. But there's another case that we can also discuss that falls within the purview of what Bathsheba is saying here. Don't give your strength to a woman or women. But we've got another case in the Bible where a man gave his strength to one woman and gave his strength to his wife. And we can see the consequences of what happened to King Ahab, another man with very serious consequences, both for himself and for his family and for Israel in the sins that he committed. Her name was Jezebel. Jezebel was the wife of Ahab. She was a woman with vast, unbelievable control over and influence over her husband. It was an influence which was used for evil because Jezebel was an extremely evil woman. And Ahab was a passive, do-nothing, that let her run all over him. He never put any controls. He never stopped her. He never stood up as the head of the household or the head of the family. But Ahab was a man that just sat back and let this woman do anything she wanted to do. He gave his strength to a woman. That woman was his wife. She was born and raised about 900 years before Christ. And Jezebel was an idolater. But not only was she an idolater, but she was able to convince Ahab, who was a chosen vessel of God and a Jew. She was not even a Jew. She was a Gentile. She was not an Israelite. She was an idolater, but Ahab was such a weak, passive individual that she was able to cause Ahab to accept idolatry himself, and then was going to cause him and have him introduce idolatry to Israel, brought into Israel the worship of her native idols, and caused him to use his power as the king of Israel to establish the worship of idols instead of the worship of the true God. And he built altars, and he built altars and arbors to the strange God. She was also a woman that was dedicated to to accomplish her purposes, and that was to bring idolatry to Israel, to avoid and to ignore the one true God. She was ambitious, and she perpetuated her power. She was unscrupulous in the ways that she worked, because whatever this woman wanted, she got. And because of her weak, passive husband that would not stand up, she was able to take his authority and his influence and was able to do anything and everything that she wanted. And she introduced into the land of Israel the evil idolatry that destroyed not only herself and her husband and her family, but also caused great suffering and consequences to the nation of Israel. When you read through 1 Kings 16, 18, 19, 21, and 2 Kings 9, you begin to get a little idea of Jezebel and the evil nature and the evil characteristics of this woman. First, she was very presumptuous. In 1 Kings 18 and 13, Elijah the prophet God was engaged with a conversation with a man by the name of Obadiah. Obadiah said to Elijah, "Was it not told my Lord what I did with Jezebel? Slew the prophets of the Lord?" Now that's a strange statement when you stop to think about it. Ahab is the king. Ahab is the one that commands the military of the Israelites. Ahab is the one that is in charge of the politics and the policies of the land of Israel. But then he says it was Jezebel that slew the prophets of the Lord. A very presumptuous person. What this is telling us is that this evil woman had the total and complete authority of running this country over her husband. And she usurped authority from her husband to the point that she led the military of Israel and told them what to do and when to do it and where to do it. And there was disastrous results at the prodding of Jezebel because they began to destroy, to kill the prophets of God. She had no right to control the political and the military authority of Israel, but because her husband was too weak-kneed to stand up and to stop her and to do his responsibility as the king of Israel, as the head of the house, this woman took over and completely began to change the system around, and she was able to lead the military to the point that they began to kill the servants of God. Her husband was the king, and nowhere in the history can we find of a woman that was granted the type of power that Jezebel took in the land of Israel. Jezebel did this while her husband was still alive. She ran the kingdom, and Ahab set to the side and let her run it, and she ran it her way. She was a very presumptuous woman, and she was ambitious. Elijah's challenge to the prophets of Baal and to the prophets of the grove to meet on Carmel, Mount Carmel, in 1 Kings 18, 18. It said, "Now," Elijah said, "Now therefore send and gather to me all Israel unto Mount Carmel, and the prophets of Baal, 450, and the prophets of the grove, 400, which eat at Jezebel's table." Jezebel's table. Not Ahab's table. Jezebel's table. She's the one that's in charge. She's the one that's running things. Ahab is just the ruler in name. We can read of Joseph in the Bible in Genesis where he hosted guests at his table. We can read of Abraham in Genesis where he hosted guests at his table. But now when we get to the book of Kings, we're reading about the wife of the king of Israel, Jezebel, that hosts people at her table. She was also vengeful. The last half of 1 Kings 18 records his confrontation on Mount Carmel when Elijah made his sacrifice and put water around it. And the prophets of Baal made their sacrifice. And then they begged, and all day long they asked their God to take the sacrifice. And then Elijah simply asked God to take the sacrifice. And the sacrifice and all of the water was consumed. But when he consumed it, it was a proof that God was God, and the servants and the prophets of Baal were slain. These were the false prophets that had eaten at Jezebel's table, and they were slain after God sent fire from heaven that consumed Elijah's waterlogged offering. But listen to what Jezebel's reaction to this event was when Ahab explained it to her. 1 Kings 19, 1-3. And Ahab told Jezebel all that Elijah had done. and withal how he had slain all the prophets with the sword. Then Jezebel sent a messenger unto Elijah, saying, So let the gods do to me, and more also, if I make not thy life as the life of one of them by tomorrow about this time. And when Elijah saw that, he arose and ran for his life. Ahab said, Here's what happened when your prophets of Baal, your 450 prophets, that had eaten at your table that you were so fond of. Here's what happened when they had to face the Almighty God. They're all dead. They're gone. And Elijah is still alive. So what does Jezebel do? She sends word to Elijah. You're going to pay for this, Elijah. You will be as dead as my prophets by this time tomorrow. And it said that Elijah arose and ran for his life. Again, she usurps the authority of her husband. She takes action against Elijah while Ahab does nothing. And now she's going to take revenge on the man of God that only did what God had told him to do. Because these prophets that were slain were her friends. What a shame Elijah didn't stick around after the miracle that God had already performed. Could have saved a whole lot of problems for the people of Israel. But instead he ran, and Jezebel was still alive. And fourthly, she was a very ruthless woman. No scruples, no morals, and no boundaries. We read about the case of Naboth, the Jezreelite, who had the orchard, the vineyard that Ahab wanted, and Naboth wouldn't sell it to him. So it says in 1 Kings 21 and 4 that Ahab comes down, and in a childish pout, he lays upon his bed, turns away his face, and would eat no meat, eat no bread. And when Jezebel sees him here, she says, What is this pity party that you've thrown for yourself about? And he said, Naboth won't let me have his orchard, and I want him. And she said, Do thou not govern the kingdom of Israel? Arise and eat bread, and let thine heart be merry. I will give thee the vineyard of Naboth, this Jezreelite. She then arranged for Naboth to be prosecuted on the trumped up charge of blaspheming God and blaspheming the king. And Naboth, after the trial, was found guilty and was stoned to death. And when Naboth was dead, the vineyard now belongs to Jezebel, who in turn gives it to King Ahab. Very wicked woman. And probably the two most wicked things that she has done on this occasion, we really need to understand. You know, she asked her anemic and her spineless husband to paraphrase, who's in charge here? You or Naboth? You're the king. Why do you let this man do with what he wants to do? Why don't you stand up to it? But of course, the truth of the matter was is that Naboth didn't run the kingship. And Ahab didn't run the kingdom. Jezebel ran the kingdom, and she took care of the problem. She got rid of Naboth, and she gave Ahab the vineyard that he wanted. She was in charge because Ahab had stood back and gave her the authority to usurp his authority. You know, the other tragic irony about this whole thing is that she made a charge against Naboth that he was blaspheming the king and blaspheming God. She was the one that was a blasphemer. Naboth had done nothing wrong. She was the one that blasphemed. She was the one that lied. Yet Naboth was the one that died for the blasphemy. She was presumptuous. And she took over the kingdom with all of the power and the authority because her husband wouldn't stand up to her and stop her. She was ambitious. And she was going to do anything and everything she wanted to do, and there was no way she could be stopped. She was vengeful, even to the point that she would go against the prophet of God. When the prophet did what God had told him, she was ruthless when she took away the vineyard and gave it to Ahab. Those are the things that we can understand about this woman Jezebel, and we've not even talked about or spoken very little about her idolatry, and that she was a murderer, and that she was a liar. And she was a murderer. But that's not what distinguishes Jezebel. She was a liar, but that's not what distinguishes Jezebel. She was a murderer, but that is not what distinguishes Jezebel. What distinguishes Jezebel was that her husband, a chosen vessel and the chosen king of God, gave her his strength, just as Bathsheba centuries ago had warned Solomon against, and allowed her to be presumptuous and ambitious and vengeful and ruthless. And when he gave his strength to her, she then exhibited these characteristics of presumption and ambition and vengeance and ruthlessness because he gave her the opportunity. Now, I guess the final irony of this entire story is, had he stood up and been responsible as God had expected him to be, as the man, the king of Israel and the head of this household, without his acquiescence to this woman, there is absolutely nothing that she did that she could have done. And I'm telling you, the spirit of Jezebel is still alive in our world today. Let me give you this final example and then I'm going to close. I think it was January of 73 when the Supreme Court, I think by a 5-4 majority, decided to make abortion legal in this country. And since 1973, that's 46 years ago. 46 years ago when this was made law, there have been a minimum of 5 million babies, innocent babies, killed each and every year. Now you multiply 5 million times 46, you're getting real close to 250,000 babies, if my math is correct, that has been destroyed. Innocent babies murdered. And I see pictures, since Trump has been in office, some of these Bible Belt states have gone to the states, the governments, and they're trying to tighten the controls on abortion. And they're trying to make it harder, and they're trying to get rid of these doctors that commit it. And yet you look on your television, you look on the news, you see all these women holding up the placards and holding up their cards. Give us the right to abortion. Give us the right to murder our babies. I'm telling you. The spirit of Jezebel is still alive, even in the land of the home of the free and the land of the brave, even today. A Jezebel cannot exist without the complicity of her husband. A Jezebel must be a woman. A Jezebel must be a married woman. And a Jezebel must be in a position to violate the influence and to overreach the boundaries that God has set for a wife. The husband has to give up his strength. And this is exactly what Bathsheba was talking about when she spoke to Solomon so very many years ago. Jezebel was a very wicked person, and God's people were led down the path of destruction because of her evil ways. She died a horrible, horrific death because of her evil ways. So did her weak, pathetic husband Ahab, and the nation of Israel suffered and suffered greatly because of the sins of Jezebel. Let me leave you with this very last lesson. God created the world and He created humanity. He then gave us instructions as to how we are to live and how the relationships are to be handled. He set up man as the head of the family, as the head of the wife. He gave woman as a helpmate. He made her equal, but He gave her different responsibilities. And any time and every time we seek to deviate from the plan of God, even regardless of our liberal, politically correct world today, God created man to be responsible, to be the head of the family and the head of the house, and He created woman to be His helpmate. It always pays to read and to understand and to obey the will and the instructions of God. We never like to close that off in a song of invitation. If we can help you in any way, come forward as we say.